Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, Dr. Anthony Fauci on the state of the pandemic. The number of daily coronavirus cases in the country is hitting record numbers. It's a worrisome trend as we approach the winter months. But even as the virus rages, the president has continued to downplay its seriousness, holding large rallies and attacking Dr. Fauci for his public health message. So, what should the country be doing to address the virus right now? How soon can we expect a vaccine? And what will the winter bring? I asked Dr. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. We spoke Tuesday morning. Unfortunately, in the midst of the interview, my internet connection went down and we had to switch to my cell phone. Dr. Fauci, first and foremost, I want to say thank you for all you have done for the American people to help them understand the seriousness of this virus.
Thank you, Diane. I appreciate you saying that.
On Sunday, the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, told CNN's Jake Tapper, quote, "We are not going to control the virus." How did you interpret that statement?
I think what Mr. Meadows was reflecting was the difficulty it is in getting, the population to do the things I've been telling them that they should do. I tend to disagree with that, Diane. I believe that if we uniformly implement the fundamental basic public health measures of universal wearing of masks, keeping distance, avoiding congregate settings, namely crowds, doing things outdoors much more preferentially than indoors, although this becomes difficult as we enter into the cooler season, and washing of hands, I believe that we can prevent these types of surges that we're seeing. I don't think it's impossible to do that. I don't think you need to shut down. Everyone is concerned about shutting down the country again with all of the side effects that that has, both on the population itself as well as on the economy. As I've said for so long now, Diane, I don't think you need to shut down. I think if everybody uniformly practiced these fundamental public health practices, I don't think we would have to accept the inevitability of seeing the surges that we're seeing right now.
What kinds of meetings do you think are going on at the White House, including top medical officials in regard to the COVID virus?
We have a task force, as you know, Diane. We used to meet very regularly. In fact, during the real peak in the early spring, you might recall, we were meeting literally 7 days a week, sometimes, and very, very often 5 days a week. Sometime, as you know, in the middle of the summer or so, we pivoted away from that, focusing much more on the economic aspects. And you were seeing less of me and Dr. Birx and others in discussing, and much more of what the economic situation was of getting the country open. Currently, right now, we're having about one task force meeting a week. We have a governor's call in which the vice president leads a call with the governors going back and forth, talking about what the situation is in their individual states. And then the doctors, namely myself and Dr. Birx and Dr. Redfield and Dr. Hahn and others, have a call at least once a week. But we have veered away from the daily task force meetings over the last several months.
So, in fact, the doctors are meeting separately from the governors and the vice president. You're not speaking directly.
Oh, we are.
Vice president.
I'm talking about in addition to the task force meeting. in which we do directly interact with the vice president. In addition, we have a separate meeting of the doctors just talking about the public health things.
And how is that meeting different from what is said during the meeting with the vice president?
Oh, it's just working out some of the details and talking in a much more informal way, because when you have a task force meeting, there are multiple agenda items, not all of which are related to specifically health issues. There are a number of other items. The reason we elected to add on as an additional meeting, the meeting with the physicians, because you wanted to delve a little bit more deeply into some of the medical issues. As you probably know, Dr. Birx of late has been putting in tremendous effort into traveling around the country, trying to meet with the governors and the public health officials, trying to convince them that it's important to implement the public health measures that we've been talking about. Also, on a separate additional call, Dr. Birx and I often get on the phone with mayors, such as the mayors of Miami, because they were having such a difficult time there. So in addition to the single task force meeting, we are doing a couple of other things ad hoc in order to fill in to get more bang out of the buck, as it were.
But from what you're saying, that message that Dr. Birx is trying to convey to governors is in direct contrast to what the White House is saying, for example, in regard to masks, in regard to socially distancing, et cetera.
Not exactly, Diane. I believe what we're seeing is that the White House is saying to wear masks. The only trouble is when you look at what actually happens at these congregate settings, not a lot of people are wearing the mask.
Not even the president.
Yeah, yeah.
So that doesn't really set a great example. I want to take you back to the outbreak of HIV/AIDS and the kinds of experiences you had back then, which perhaps are relevant to what we're seeing now in terms of messaging from high up authorities. Can you take us back to that?
Well, you know, Diane, it was varied, because early on, you might recall, in the very early 80s, that there wasn't much use of the bully pulpit of the higher levels of government to warn people about behavior. And it was people like myself and a couple of other people in the very early 80s who were out there talking about the things to do to avoid infection and the kind of public health measures. And it was unfortunate that at least for the first term of the Reagan administration, that the word AIDS was not even used until the second term. And one of the things was that we felt if the bully pulpit of the White House was used to call attention to some of these things, we might have moved a little bit more quickly. From administration to administration, that changed. You know, that got better as we got into the George H.W. Bush administration, and then things were very open during the Clinton administration. George W. Bush probably made the greatest contribution to the HIV/AIDS effort by forming the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR. So it really varies from, we can't say there was one type of an approach with HIV. It varied widely because this is something that was protracted over so many years. You remember, it started in 1981. So we're almost 40 years into it. And it wasn't a linear, single, consistent messaging and effort from one administration to another. It was varied greatly.
A quick break. When we come back, more from Dr. Anthony Fauci. Here is the rest of my conversation with Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and the nation's expert on the COVID-19 pandemic.
President Trump said recently, Dr. Fauci, that we're rounding the corner on this virus. I understand that there's no evidence to support that statement. Is that correct?
Well, Diane, I mean, the data speak for themselves. We've had 80 plus thousand infections the other day, and we're averaging between, on a 7-day basis, over 60,000 infections. And if you look at the map of the country, of the counties, states, and cities in which you have an increase in test positivity, that more than 30 of those states are going in the wrong direction. They're actually increasing, which is ultimately going to lead to an increase in hospitalizations. And unfortunately, ultimately, that will lead to an increase in deaths. So we're in a precarious situation, particularly as we go into the cooler months of the fall, which we're in right now, and ultimately the colder months of the winter, particularly with holiday seasons coming up. I would have much preferred, as I spoke about in the summer, to get our baseline number of daily infections way down, very low, below 10,000, so that when you are added with the extra challenge of the cold weather, that you can handle it a bit better. But when you have a baseline of infections that right now are higher than they've ever been, that compounds the challenge and makes it more difficult to deal with the additional difficulty of the colder weather, which by necessity is going to drive more people indoors as opposed to allowing them to do things outdoors.
That's why I'm confused by the actions of Vice President Mike Pence, who, as you said, he is head of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. He's ignoring CDC quarantine guidance after a number of people in his inner circle tested positive. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I can't explain that, Diane. I mean, I think I know the questions you're asking is going to be asking me to pit against the president and the vice president. That is not going to be helpful to what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to get the message out so that people could hear what I'm saying as what I believe as a trusted public official. So I just think that if we keep going about pitting me against what the president or the vice president is doing, that's actually not going to be very helpful.
Actually,
I'm sorry.
I'm not trying to pit you against them. I'm just asking for your opinion about whether this is wise behavior.
Well, I can speak generically, and then that's
sure.
The answer is in there. Generically, that you should A, avoid congregate crowded sessions. B, when you are there out of necessity, you should be wearing a mask. That's for sure. And that we should abide by CDC guidelines.
Okay, turning to the vaccine, you've said we'll probably know whether a vaccine is safe and effective by the end of November. Might there actually be a number of different vaccines available?
You know, Diane, I think that's the good news about this very difficult situation that we're finding ourselves in, that we've been speaking about for the last few minutes, that yes, indeed, we have a number of candidates. The federal government has made a major investment of resources into 6 vaccine candidates, 5 of which are in advanced phase 3 trials, and 2 of which started trials on July 27th. They're fully enrolled, and we should be getting significant data as to the efficacy and certainly the safety that we're accruing literally now as we speak. The projection is that by the middle of November, beginning of December, we should know whether one or both of those, and there are 2 or 3 or 4 more behind them, but for those 2, we'll likely know whether they're safe and effective. And as I've mentioned publicly before, and I'll repeat it for you, I'm cautiously optimistic based on the data that we have from animal data, as well as from phase 1 trials that we did some time ago, that these vaccines induce a robust antibody response that's equivalent to, if not better, than the reconvalescent response of people who actually get infected. So if that is true, which I think it is, by the time we get to the end of November, beginning of December, we'll know that we have a vaccine. So that means that by the very first part of the year and the end of this current calendar year, we'll begin to distribute vaccines to people in the high priority groups, such as healthcare workers and those with underlying conditions. So we're right on target that I predicted almost a year ago, back in January, when we first started the trials. You might recall, Diane, I said, I hoped that we would have vaccine available within a year to 18 months. And it looks like it's going to be closer to a year rather than 18 months.
So how much of a problem do you think there might be with regard to people being wary of getting the vaccine because of safety concerns?
You know, I think that is a real problem, Diane. That's something we're trying to mitigate against by getting the facts out and explaining to people, like, it is done quickly, but not at the expense of safety or at the expense of scientific integrity at all. We want to be very transparent, and that is the case. One of the things that people need to appreciate, that the actual data on the vaccine is evaluated by an independent body that is beholden to no one, not to the company, not to the president, not to the administration, not to anyone. They're an independent group that evaluate the data both from a safety standpoint and from an efficacy standpoint. They will intermittently look at the data and make a determination whether it's safe enough to continue, and when it looks like it's efficacious, to say the data look good now, you might want to start going forth to try and get a license or an emergency use authorization. I think the public needs to appreciate that that is a very, very independent group of people. And ultimately, the data will become quite public so that people like myself and my scientific colleagues will be able to evaluate it separately. And I know there's this concern that things are going to go rapidly because of political considerations. That's not going to be the case, Diane, because there's enough transparency in this that that's not going to happen.
So, you know, people are feeling a profound sense of hopelessness with these winter months drawing near. What's your best guess as to when we might be able to live what we used to think of as normal lives?
You know, that's a great question, Diane, that so many people ask. It's going to be a gradual process. It's not going to be like a light switch turning on and off where we go from where we are now to complete normal. I think it's going to be a combination of getting enough people vaccinated with a relatively good, moderately effective vaccine. I would think that a vaccine about 75% or so would certainly be adequate, but you've got to get a substantial proportion of the population vaccinated, and you can't abandon public health measures because it can't depend entirely on a vaccine. And I think as we go forth into 2021, by the time we get to the third or the fourth quarter of 2021, I think you'll see a gradual capability of approaching normal. What do I mean by that? I mean, restaurants will be able to have customers in the normal way. Theaters might be able to be opened, maybe not at full capacity, but certainly open. Sports events might start to have spectators, both indoors and outdoors. Again, maybe not at complete capacity, but certainly approaching it. And if we continue to get control over the outbreak so that the infection rate becomes extremely low, in contrast to where it is now, I would think that we might be able to get very close to really normal within a year. But I don't think it's going to happen before then. But I do think it's going to be a gradual progression in the right direction that will be greatly enhanced by the efficacy and uptake of a vaccine.
Are there measures that other countries have taken that we might be able to adapt to help slow the spread of COVID-19?
Well, you know, the problem is that a few months ago, the European Union, as an example, was very effective because they shut down very completely in essentially sheltering in place, and they got their level way, way down. Unfortunately, if you look now at what we call the heat map, which indicates the level of infection of the European Union now, they're really having a terrible problem. The central countries, the UK, Italy, all of the countries that were doing relatively well, as they try to open up right now and as they enter into a cooler season like we are, they're starting to see very large increases in cases, which means that they are seriously considering, many of the countries, locking down again, which there's a great deal of pushback about that for the situation that the economy globally is in tough shape to begin with. If they lock down again, it would make it even worse. So there really is a lot of conflict and a lot of concern about what to do about those surging of cases in the European Union. They're having as much of a problem now as we are.
And so if we see that surging of cases, as we are likely to do in this cold weather coming up, do you see the possibility of the necessity for a lockdown?
You know, I think you have to always keep that on the table, Diane, but we're trying very hard not to have to revert to that. Because of the reasons that I mentioned. You know, we have such fatigue in this country right now, and it would also be very difficult for the economy. It may come to that, but I keep saying, and I truly believe, that if we are uniform in our fundamental, basic, common denominator public health measures of universal wearing of masks, avoiding congregate crowded sections, such as the kinds of things that you might see on television, trying to keep a distance and doing things more outdoors than indoors, I believe that we can prevent the rate of surging that we're seeing now in many states and cities. I don't think we need to resort right away to lockdown. I think that there would be a lot of pushback there, and it would have very serious economic consequences. We'll keep it on the table, but I don't think we need to go there. I think we can do it by normal public health measures.
Are there any solid strategies in any U.S. cities, states, or regions that you think we could try to implement on a broader scale in this country?
You know, we have seen, and again, we live in a big country, it's very heterogeneous, and sometimes it's dangerous to compare one state, city, region to another because of these differences. But, you know, Vermont had done very, very well with what they had done. New York got hit really very badly, came back down, and now they're really doing quite well, I believe. There's still precarious situations all over, but they're doing well. I just think that we all as a nation have got to pull together and realize that as a nation together, we can get through this. We don't want to resort to things that are very draconian like shutdown, but we need to make sure we adhere to the public health measures that we know work.
Last question, Dr. Fauci. You've said that you've told your children you do not want them to travel to come home for Thanksgiving. What is your thinking about Christmas?
You know, I think that remains to be seen, Diane. We'll have to see whether we're successful in blunting the surges that we're seeing right now. But I, with regard to my children and Thanksgiving, you know, I don't think we're going to get down to a safe level between now and then. And then for that reason, and factually, they were the ones that decided that they did not want to come home because they did not want to endanger me because of my age. It was there. I mean, I would love to have them, but they're very conscientious about that and very protective of me.
So for me to travel to Boston at my age for Christmas, you don't know yet whether that makes sense.
I don't know yet. We should probably know in the next month or so. But I would suggest, Diane, you're a friend. I've known you for a long time. I think we should realize that this year is a very, very unusual year. We may need to do things that are not socially convenient or desirable just to protect oneself until we get over this.
Dr. Fauci, thank you once again for being with us and for everything you're doing for the American people.
Thank you, Diane. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
That was Dr. Anthony Fauci, Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and the nation's expert on the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's all for today. Thanks to those of you who've reached out to let me know what you'd like me to cover during these very difficult times. Please continue to let us know what's on your mind. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman, Allison Brody, and Sandra Baker. Thanks for listening, all. And do please take Dr. Fauci's advice. Wear those masks. Keep a safe social distance. I'm Diane Rehn.